Hello everyone, welcome to Unsolved Mysteries 101, where we'll have the 101 on mysteries that have not been solved to this day. So if you're interested, please subscribe to my podcast. We'll be posting every Thursday, so stay on the lookout. And like previous weeks, let's start off with a fun fact. The fun fact of the day is, it took the creator of the Rubik's Cube, Erno Rubik, 1 month to solve the cube after he created it. As of June 2018, the world record is 4.22 seconds. Now, let's get straight into the mystery. The mystery today is the Zodiac Killer. The Zodiac Killer is an American serial killer who operated in Northern California from at least the late 1960s to the early 1970s. His identity remains unknown. The killer originated the name in a series of taunting letters and cards that he sent them to the San Francisco Bay Area Press. The letters included four cryptograms. Out of all the four cryptograms, only one has been solved. The Zodiac Killer murdered five known victims in Benicia, Vallejo, Napa County, and San Francisco between December 1968 and October 1969. He targeted young couples, with two of the men surviving attempted murder. He also murdered a male cab driver. The Zodiac Killer himself once claimed to have murdered 37 victims. San Francisco Police Department marked the case as inactive in April 2004, but then opened it at some point previous to March 2007. So although the Zodiac Killer claimed to have committed 37 murders in the letters to the newspapers, the investigators agreed on only seven confirmed victims. So the Lake Herman Road murders was the first murders that widely attributed to the Zodiac Killer. It was the shootings of high school students Betty Lou Jensen and David Fort Faraday on December 20th, 1968. It was on Lake Herman Road. The couple were on their first date and they had planned to attend a Christmas concert at Hogan High School about three blocks from Jensen's house. The couple, though, instead visited a friend before stopping at a local restaurant, and then they drove out on Lake Herman Road. So about 10:15 p.m., Faraday parked his mother's Rambler in a gravel turnout, which was well known as a lover's lane. So shortly after 11 p.m., their bodies were found by Stella Borges, who had lived nearby. So the police investigated the crime, but there was no leads. Robert Graysmith, he had postulated that another car pulled into the turnout just before 11 p.m. and parked beside the couple. And then the killer apparently exited the second car and walked toward the Rambler, possibly ordering the couple out of the Rambler. And Jensen appeared to have exited the car first, yet when Faraday was halfway out, the killer apparently shot him in the head. The killer then shot Jensen five times in the back as she fled. Her body was found 28 feet from the car. The killer then drove off. So the next was the Blue Rock Spring murders, and it was just before midnight on July 4th, 1969. Darlene Farron and Michael Magoo had drove into Blue Rock Spring Park in Vallejo, 4 miles from Lake Herman Road murder site, and parked. While the couple sat in Farron's car, a second car drove into the lot and parked alongside them, but almost immediately drove away. Returning about 10 minutes later, the second car parked behind them. The driver of the second car then exited the vehicle, approaching the passenger side door of Farron's car and carrying a flashlight and a 9mm Luger. So the killer directed the flashlight into Magoo's and Farron's eyes before shooting at them, firing five times. Both victims were hit, and several bullets had passed through Magoo and into Farron. The killer then started to walk back to his car, but then he heard Magoo moaning, so he returned to the car and shot each victim twice before finally leaving. On August 1st, 1969, three letters were received at the Vallejo Times Herald, the San Francisco Chronicle, and the San Francisco Examiner. The letters took credit for the shootings at Lake Herman Road and Blue Rock Springs. Each letter also included one-third of a 408 symbol cryptogram, which the killer claimed contained his identity. The killer demanded they be printed on each paper's front page, or he would cruise around all weekend, killing lone people in the night, then move on to kill again, until he ended up with a dozen people over the weekend. So the Chronicle published its third of the cryptogram on page 4 of the next day's edition. An article printed alongside the code quoted Vallejo Police Chief Jack E. Stilts as saying, "We're not satisfied that the letter was written by the murderer," and requested the writer send a second letter with more facts to prove his identity. The threatened murders did not happen, and all three parts were eventually published. On August 7th, 1969, another letter was received at the San Francisco Examiner with the salutation, "Dear Editor, this is the Zodiac speaking," and this would be the first time the killer had used his name for identification. The letter was a response to Chief Stilt's request for more details that would prove he had killed Faraday, Jensen, and Farron. In it, the Zodiac included details about the murders which had not yet been released to the public, as well as a message to the police that when they cracked his code, they will have him. On August 8, 1969, Donald and Bette Hardin of Salinas, California, cracked the 408 symbol cryptogram. It contained a misspelled message in which the killer seemed to reference the most dangerous game. He also said he was collecting slaves for the afterlife. No name appears in the Dakota text, and the killer said that he would not give away his identity because it would slow down or stop his slave collection. What? Okay. So on September 27, 1969, Pacific Union College students Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd were picnicking at Lake Berryessa, on a small island connected by a sand spit to Twin Oak Ridge. While they were picnicking, a white man, about 5 feet 11 inches, he weighed more than 170 pounds, with combed, greasy brown hair. He had approached them wearing a black executioner's type hood with clip-on sunglasses over the eye holes and a bib-like device on his chest that had a white 3x3-inch cross circle symbol on it. He approached them with a gun, which Hartnell believed to be a .45. The hooded man claimed to be an escaped convict from a jail with a two-word name. They said it was either Colorado or Montana. And where he said that he killed a guard and subsequently stolen a car, explaining that he now needed their car money to go to Mexico as the vehicle he had been driving was too hot. So he had brought pre-cut lengths of plastic clothesline and told Shepherd to tie up Hartnell before the Zodiac tied her up. The killer had checked and he tightened Hartnell's bonds after discovering Shepherd had bound Hartnell's hand loosely. Hartnell initially believed this event to be a bizarre robbery, but the man drew a knife and stabbed them both repeatedly. Hartnell suffered 6 and Shepherd 10 wounds in the process. The killer then hiked 500 yards back up to Knoxville Road, drew the cross symbol circle symbol on Hartnell's car door with a black felt tip pin and rope beneath it. Vallejo/12/26/7469/September 27, 69-630/by knife. And at 7:40 p.m., the killer called the Napa County Sheriff's Office from a payphone to report this latest crime. The caller first stated to the operator that he wished to report a murder, no, a double murder, before stating that he had been the perpetrator of the crime. The phone was found still off the hook minutes later at the Napa car wash on Main Street in Napa by KVON radio reporter Pat Stanley, only a few blocks from the sheriff's office, yet 20 miles from the crime scene. Detectives were able to lift the still wet palm print from the telephone, but were never able to match it to any suspect. So after hearing their screams for help, a man and his son who were fishing in a nearby cove discovered the victims and summoned help by contacting park rangers. Napa County Sheriff Deputies Dave Collins and Ray Land were the first law enforcement officers to arrive at the crime scene. Cecilia Shepherd was conscious when Collins arrived, providing him with a detailed description of the attacker. Hartnell and Shepherd were taken to Queen of the Valley Hospital in Napa by ambulance. Shepherd lapsed into a coma during transport to the hospital, never regained consciousness. She died 2 days later, but Hartnell survived to recount his tale to the press. Napa County Sheriff Detective Ken Narlow, who was assigned to the case from the outset, worked on solving the crime until he retired from the department in 1987. And then 2 weeks later, on October 11, 1969, a white male passenger entered the cab driven by Paul Stein at the intersection of Mason and Geary Streets in San Francisco, requesting to be taken to Washington and Maple Streets in Presidio Heights. For reasons unknown, Stein drove one block past Maple to Cherry Street. The passenger then shot Stein once in the head with a 9mm, took Stein's wallet and car keys, and tore away a section of Stein's blood-stained shirt tail. So the passenger was observed by three teenagers across the street at 9:55 p.m. who called the police while the crime was in progress. They observed the man wiping the cab down before walking away towards the Presidio, one block to the north. Two blocks from the crime scene, Patrol Officer Don Folk and Eric Zelms responded to the call of had observed a white man walking along the sidewalk east on Jackson Street and stepping into a stairway leading up to the front yard of one of the homes on the north side of the street. So Folk estimated the white male pedestrian to be 35 to 45 years old, 5'10", tall, with a crew cut similar to but slightly older than the description of the teenagers who observed the killer in and out of Stein's cab, as a 25 to 30-year-old crew cut white male about 5'8" to 5'9" tall. The police radio dispatcher had, however, initially alerted officers to be on the lookout for a black suspect, so Folk and Zelms drove past him without stopping, and the mix-up in description remains unexplained. So a search ensued, but no suspects were found, and this was the last officially confirmed murder by the Zodiac Killer. So the Stein murder was initially thought to be a routine robbery that had escalated. However, on October 13, the San Francisco Chronicle received another letter from the Zodiac containing a piece of bloody shirt and taking credit for the killing. The three team witness worked with the police artist to prepare a composite sketch of Stein's killing. A few days later, this police artist returned, working with the witness to prepare a second composite sketch of the killer. Detective Bill Armstrong and Dave Toshi were assigned to the case. The San Francisco Police Department investigated an estimated 2,500 suspects over a period of years. And on October 14, 1969, the Chronicles received yet another letter from the Zodiac, this time containing a swatch of Paul Stein's shirt tail as proof he was the killer. It also included a threat about killing school children on a school bus. Oh my gosh. To do this, Zodiac wrote, "Just shoot out the front tire and then pick off the kiddies as they come bouncing out." Wow. At 2 p.m. on October 20th, 1969, someone claiming to be the Zodiac called the Oakland Police Department, demanding that one of the two prominent lawyers, F. Lee Bailey or Melvin Belly, appear on the AM San Francisco, which was a talk show on KGL-TV that was hosted by Jim Dunbar. Bailey was not available, but Belly did appear on the show. Dunbar appeared to be the appeal to the viewers to keep the lines open, and eventually someone claiming to be the Zodiac called several times and said his name was Sam. Belly agreed to meet with him in Dale City, but the suspect never showed up. So he's just playing games, y'all. He's just playing games. On November 8th, 1969, the Zodiac mailed a card with another cryptogram consisting of 340 characters. The 340 character cipher has never been decoded. Numerous possible solutions has been suggested, but none can be claimed as definitive. On November 9th, 1969, the Zodiac mailed a 7-page letter stating that two policemen stopped and actually spoke with him 3 minutes after he shot Stein. I think it's just crazy how this man was just able to get away with all this. Excerpts from the letters were published in the Chronicles on November 12th, including the Zodiac's claim that someday Officer Don Folk wrote a memo. That same day, Officer Don Folk wrote a memo explaining what had happened the night of Stein's murder. And on December 20th, 1969, exactly 1 year after the murders of David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen, the Zodiac mailed a letter to Belly that included another swatch of Stein's shirt. The Zodiac said he wanted Belly to help him. So various authors speculated at the time of the killings that other murders may have been the work of the Zodiac, but none have been confirmed. Robert Domingos, 18, and Linda Edwards, 17, shot and killed on June 4, 1963, on a beach near Gavita. There are some specific similarities between their attack and the Zodiac's attack at Lake Berryessa 6 years later. Cherry Jo Bates, she was 18, stabbed to death and nearly decapitated on October 30th, 1966, at Riverside City College in Riverside. Bates' possible connection to the Zodiac only appeared 4 years after her murder, when San Francisco Chronicle reporter Paul Avery received a tip regarding similarities between the Zodiac killings and the circumstances surrounding Bates' death. Donna Lass, 25, last seen September 6, 1970, in State Line, Nevada. A postcard with an advertisement from Forest Pines Condominiums posted on the back was received at the Chronicle on March 22nd, 1971. No evidence has been uncovered to connect Lass' disappearance with the Zodiac killer. However, Kathleen Johns, 22, allegedly abducted on March 22nd, 1970 on Highway 132 near I-580 in an area west of Modesto. Johns escaped from the car of a man who drove her and her infant daughter around the area between Stockton and Patterson for approximately 1.5 hours. So on the night of March 22nd, 1970, Kathleen Johns was driving from San Bernardino to Petaluma to visit her mother. She was 7 months pregnant and had her 10-month-old daughter beside her. While heading west on Highway 132 near Modesto, a car behind her began honking its horn and flashing its headlights. So she pulled off the road and stopped. The man in the car parked behind her, approached her car, stated that he observed that her right rear wheel was wobbling, and offered to tighten the lug nuts. So after finishing his work, the man drove off. Yet when Johns pulled forward to re-enter the highway, the wheel almost immediately came off the car. The man returned, offering to drive her to the nearest gas station for help. So she and her daughter climbed into his car. and during the ride, the car passed several service stations, but the man did not stop. So for about 90 minutes, he drove back and forth around the back roads near Tracy. When Johns asked why he was not stopping, he would change the subject. And when the driver finally stopped at an intersection, John jumped out with her daughter and hid in a field. The driver searched for her using his flashlight, telling her that he would not hurt her, before eventually giving up. Unable to find her, he got back into his car and drove off. Johns hitched a ride to the police station in Patterson. And when Johns gave her statement to the sergeant on duty, she noticed the police composite sketch of Paul Stein Killer and recognized him as the man who had abducted her and her child. Fearing he might come back and kill them all, the sergeant had Johns wait in the dark at the nearby Mills restaurant. When her car was found, it had been gutted and torched. Most accounts say he threatened to kill her and her daughter while driving them around, but at least one police report disputes that. John's account to Paul Avery of the Chronicle indicates her abductor left his car and searched for her in the dark with a flashlight. However, one report she made it to the police, but she stated he did not leave the vehicle. So the Zodiac, he continued to communicate with the authorities for the remainder of 1970 through letters and greeting cards to the press. And in a letter postmarked April 20th, 1970, the Zodiac wrote, "My name is," and then it was blank, and then it was followed by a 13-character cipher. The Zodiac went on to state that he was not responsible for the recent bombing of a police station in San Francisco. He was referring to the February 18, 1970 death of Sergeant Brian McDonald 2 days after the bombing at Park Station in Golden Gate Park. But he added, "There is more glory to killing a cop than a sit, because if a cop can shoot back." The letter included a diagram of a bomb the Zodiac claimed he would use to blow up a school bus. At the bottom of the diagram, he wrote, "Cross circle equal 10, comma SFPD equals 0. So Zodiac sent a greeting card postmarked April 28, 1970, to the Chronicle. Written on the card was, "I hope you enjoy yourselves when I have my blast," and it was all capitalized, the blast, followed by the Zodiac cross circle signature. On the back of the card, the Zodiac threatened to use the bus bomb soon unless the newspaper published the full details he wrote. He also wanted to start seeing people wearing some nice Zodiac buttons. So in a letter postmarked June 26, 1970, the Zodiac stated he was upset that he did not see people wearing Zodiac buttons. He wrote, "I shot a man sitting in a parked car with a 38. The Zodiac was possibly referring to the murder of Sergeant Richard Radetich a week earlier on June 19. At 5:25 a.m., Radetich was writing a parking ticket in his squad car when an assailant shot him in the head with a 38 caliber pistol. Radetich died 15 hours later. SFPD denies the Zodiac was involved in this murder, and it remains unsolved. Included with the letter was a Phillips 66-roll map of the San Francisco Bay Area. On the image of Mount Diablo, the Zodiac had drawn a cross circle similar to the ones he had included in previous correspondence, and at the top of the cross circle, he placed a 0 and then a 3, 6, and a 9. The company instruction stated that the 0 was to be set at Mag North. The letter also included a 32-letter cipher that the killer claimed would, in conjunction with the code, lead to the location of a bomb he had buried and set to go off in the fall. The cipher was never decoded and the alleged bomb was never located. The killer signed a note with circle cross 12, comma SFPD 0. So in a letter to the Chronicles postmarked July 24, 1970, the Zodiac took credit for Kathleen John's abduction 4 months after the incident. And in July 26, 1970 letter, the Zodiac paraphrased a song from The Mikado, adding his own lyrics about making a little list of the ways he planned to torture his slaves in paradise. The letter was signed with a large exaggerated cross circle symbol and a new score. Cross circle equal 13, SFPD equal 0. A final note at the bottom of the letter stated, P.S. The MT Diablo code concerns radians plus number inches along the gradients. In 1981, a close examination of the radiant hint by zodiac researcher Gareth Penn led to the discovery that a radiant angle, when placed over the map per zodiac's instruction, pointed to the location of two zodiac attacks. And on October 7, 1970, the Chronicle received a 3x5-inch card signed by the zodiac with a small cross reportedly drawn with blood. The card's message was formed by pasting words and letters from an edition of the Chronicle, and 13 holes were punched across the card. Inspectors Armstrong and Tashi agreed it was highly probable and the card came from the Zodiac. On October 27, 1970, Chronicle reporter Paul Avery, who has been covering the Zodiac case, had received a Halloween card signed with the letter Z and the Zodiac cross circle symbol. Handwritten on the card was the note, "Peekaboo, you are doomed." The threat was taken seriously and received a front page story on the Chronicle. And soon after receiving this letter, Avery received an anonymous letter alerting him to the similarities between the Zodiac's activity and the unsolved murder of Sherry Joe Bates, which had occurred 4 years earlier at the City College in Riverside in the greater Los Angeles area, more than 400 miles south of San Francisco. He reported his findings in the Chronicles on November 16, 1970. On October 30, 1966, 18-year-old Sherry Joe Bates, a student of the Riverside Community College, spent the evening at the campus library annex, and she stood there until it was to a close at 9 p.m. And neighbors reported hearing screams around 10:30 p.m. Bates was found dead the next morning, a short distance from the library, between two abandoned houses slated to be demolished for campus renovation. The wires in her Volkswagen's distributor cap had been pulled out, and she was brutally beaten and stabbed to death. A man's Timex watch with a torn wristband was found nearby, and the watch had stopped at 12:24, but the police believe the attack occurred much earlier. And a month later, on November 29, 1966, nearly identical type written letters were mailed to the Riverside Police and the Riverside Press Enterprise titled The Confession. The author claimed responsibility for the Bates murder, providing details of the crime that were not released to the public. The author warned that Bates is not the first and she will not be the last. And in December 1966, a poem was discovered carved into the bottom side of a desktop in the Riverside City College Library, titled Sick of Living / Unwilling to Die. The poem's language and handwriting resembled that of the Zodiac's letter, and it was signed with what were assumed to be the initials RH. And during the 1970 investigation, Sherrod Morrow, California's top question document examiner, expressed his opinion that the poem was written by the Zodiac. On April 30th, 1967, exactly 6 months after the Bates murder, Bates' father, Joseph, the Press Enterprise, and the Riverside Police, they all received nearly identical letters and a handwritten scrawl. The Press Enterprise and the police copy read, "Bates had to die, there will be more," with a small scribble at the bottom that resembled the letter Z. Joseph Bates' copy read, "She had to die, there will be more," but this time there was no Z signature. So the connection between Sherry Joe Bates, Riverside, and the Zodiac remains uncertain. I mean, I think that's pretty certain to me, but... So Paul Avery and the Riverside Police Department maintained that the Bates homicide was not committed by the Zodiac, but did concede some of the Bates letters may have been his work to claim credit falsely. Oh, okay. So in a Vallejo Times Herald story appearing on November 13, 1972, Bill Baker of the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office postulated that the 1963 murders of a young couple in northern Santa Barbara County might have been the work of the Zodiac Killer. So on June 4, 1963, high school senior Robert Domingos and fiancée Linda Edwards were shot dead on a beach near Lompoc. They had skipped school that day for Senior Ditch Day. Police believed that this assailant attempted to bind the victims, but when they freed themselves and attempted to flee, the killer shot them repeatedly in the back and chest with a .22 caliber weapon. The killer then placed their bodies in a small shack and then tried to unsuccessfully to burn the structure to the ground. Wow. After the Pines card, the Zodiac remained silent for nearly 3 years. The Chronicle then received a letter from the Zodiac postmarked January 29th, 1974, praising The Exorcist as the best satirical comedy that have ever seen. The letter included a snippet of the verse from the Mikado and unusual symbol at the bottom that has remained an unusual symbol at the bottom that has remained unexplained by researchers. Zodiac concluded the letter with the new score, Me equal 37, SFPD equals 0. In April 2004, the SFPD marked the case inactive, citing caseload pressure and resources demand, effectively closing the case. However, they reopened their case sometime before March 2007. The case is open in Napa County and in the city of Riverside. And in May 2018, the Vallejo Police Department announced their intention to attempt to collect the Zodiac's killer DNA from the back of stamps he used during his correspondence. The analysis by a private laboratory is expected to check the DNA against GED match. It is hoped the Zodiac killer may be caught in a similar fashion to the Golden State Killer, Joseph James D'Angelo. In May 2018, a Vallejo police detective said that results were expected in several weeks. However, to this date, no results have been reported. Robert Gray Smith's book, Zodiac, advanced Arthur Lee Allen as a potential suspect based on circumstantial evidence. Allen had been interviewed by police from early days of the Zodiac investigation and was the subject of several search warrants over a 20-year period. In 2007, Gray Smith noted that several police detectives described Allen as the most likely suspect. But in 2010, Toshi stated that all the evidence against Allen ultimately turned out to be negative. So here are some public speculations. The public speculation one is Ross Sullivan. He became a person of interest through the possible link between the Zodiac Killer and the murder of Sherry Jo Bates in Riverside. Sullivan was a library assistant at Riverside City College and was suspected by colleagues who said that he went missing for several days after the murder. Sullivan resembled sketches of the Zodiac and wore military-style boots like the footprints found at the Lake Berryessa crime scene. Sullivan was hospitalized multiple times for bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. Catherine Johns, who claimed to have been abducted by the Zodiac Killer, later recognized U.S. Navy veteran Lawrence Kane in a photo lineup. Patrol officer Don Folk, who possibly observed the Zodiac Killer following the murder of Paul Stein, said that Kane closely resembled the man he and Eric Zemps encountered. Kane worked at the same Nevada hotel as possible Zodiac victim Donna Lass. King was diagnosed with impulse control disorder after suffering brain injuries in a 1962 accident. He was arrested for voyeurism and prowling. Police informants accused U.S. Navy veteran Richard Reed Marshall, who was born Joe Don Dickey, of being the Zodiac Killer. Claimed that he privately hinted of being a murderer. Marsha lived in Riverside in 1966 and San Francisco in 1969, close to the scenes of the Bates and Stein murders. He was a silent film enthusiast and projectionist, screening Segunda de Chamon, The Red Phantom, a name used by the author of possible 1979 Zodiac Letter. Detective Ken Nilo said that Marshall makes good reading, but is not a very good suspect in my estimation. Another speculation was Ted Kaczynski, also known as the Unabomber, was investigated for possible connection to the Zodiac Killer in 1996. Kaczynski worked in Northern California at the time of the Zodiac murders, and like the Zodiac, had an interest in cryptography and threatened the press into publishing his communications. Kaczynski was ruled out by both the FBI and SFPD based on fingerprint and handwriting comparison, and by his absence from California on certain dates of known Zodiac activity. And another speculation was Bruce Davis, a member of Charles Manson's Manson family cult and a convicted murderer, was investigated, but no evidence linking him to the Zodiac murders were discovered. A 1970 report by the California Bureau of Criminal Investigation and Identification Investigation stated that all male members of the Manson family have been investigated and eliminated as Zodiac suspects. All right, guys, that is it. That is all I have for you. What are your guys' speculation? You know, honestly, this story is crazy. You know, this is actually my first time actually reading through the Zodiac Killer. Like, I knew who he was a little bit, but I didn't know all that he did. So, just reading it is the whole thing is crazy to me. But anyways, I hope you guys have a good Thursday, and until our a good Friday, because this will be posted on Friday. Until next time.